7:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Alfred Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Alfred Bruff, the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Luke Gazdick, former NHLer, now NHL analyst of Sportsnet, is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery and see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, to the phone lines we go. It's time now for Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Luke. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Good. Congratulations to you guys this morning.
Oh, thanks. We put a lot of hard work in. Talk has been a great coach for us, and we're just happy to enjoy the Pacific Division crown. But we put the work in. We put the work in, true. And that's the most important thing. Luke, let's talk about that. How remarkable is it what Rick Tocchet and this Canucks team has done based on preseason expectations?
Honestly, it's unbelievable. Out of any team in the league, for me, they've definitely been one of the most fun to cover. But in terms of improvement, and Murph called it refreshing last night on the broadcast, and I think that was a good way to put it. Just because of everything they've been through the last couple of years, the coaching carousel, the turnover on the roster, the injuries, not having Demko for a large part of last year. Everything has just kind of seemed to click this year. And not only that, but it just seems like the culture's changed. It was interesting watching that game last night against the young Calgary team that reminded me of Vancouver from maybe, call it a couple of years ago, and now talking about, looking at the big picture and future going forward. And from start to finish, Vancouver just ran their show last night. And this is a team that, I'm not going to lie, guys, like, I expected a drop-off at some point. Maybe not a drastic one, but consistently have just been there from start to finish. And, like I said, the culture that Talk and the top guys on the team have kind of provided with the locker room and the way they go about playing the game and the job that Quinn Hughes has done, and just even individual milestones and bounce back years for guys. It has been a heck of a year for the Canucks.
I'm thinking about teams like Ottawa and Buffalo and how they must be looking at the Canucks and going, we're in similar situations. We've got some talent. We just can't seem to pull it together. We seem to have a culture problem. And I just wonder if one of Rick Tocchet's closest friends, Craig Berube, is going to get the job in Buffalo or Ottawa. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Jamal Mayers yesterday, I worked with him on the panel, and he was big on that for having Chief go into Buffalo. And I think that's such an interesting coaching job out there. I think it has to be one of the most, I don't want to say tempting, but the young core of players that they have, especially on the blue line, I think they do need a veteran guy that can come in and shake up the culture, set the tone of the dressing room. I thought that was pretty telling when Casey Mittelstadt gets traded to Colorado and the first thing he says is, wow, they practice hard here, or practice is a lot faster here. I mean, that tells you something, right? And Jamal made sure to mention that Tony Granato is a good hockey man and a very smart hockey guy, just probably not the right guy for that team. But they need someone like that in there. Some sort of veteran guy that's been there before, has won before, has played the game before, and somebody that a lot of the younger players in that locker room can really buy into.
Do most of the young players want a strong voice as a coach, whether they know it or not?
Man, that's a great question, because at the end of my career, I was playing in the minors in San Diego, and the average age on our team was 21 and a half. And I will tell you that a lot of the younger players just kind of like to do their own thing. They have a bit of a chip on their shoulder when they come into pro hockey now, where it's not as much earned. It's I would just say it's expected that it's given. Not every player has that attitude, but I would say a fair amount do. And you have to have a coach that kind of finds that fine line where it's not just yelling and screaming in your ear. It's motivating and it's teaching and it's coaching. You know, talk about video meetings and stuff like that. It's not blowing guys up and ISOing guys and showing them all their mistakes and screaming and yelling. Like I said, it's finding that line where you can get in a guy's head and motivate him, but also be pretty stern about it and, you know, set a standard. And it's not an easy thing to do with today's culture. Dallas Eakins was there the year before in San Diego, and he put it perfectly for me. We were having a sit down one day, and he said, instead of coaching a team these days, he feels like he's coaching 23 individuals. He kind of has to micromanage the personalities that he has in the locker room. And they can be tough, but as soon as you get them on your side, I don't want to say it's game over, but it's a great thing because you can kind of get everyone involved. But I will tell you, the young guys, they do come in with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I'd say that's one of the hardest things is to get them to buy in.
Now, I know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it anyway. How important is it for a coach to have a leadership group of players that is on board with the coach and willing to pass on the message down to the rest of the players?
It is everything. It is everything because those guys, those young players, first and foremost, will go to the veterans first, especially if something wrong happens to them. You know what I mean? Like if they make a mistake and coach calls them out, like I said, they will go to a guy like me and be like, hey, like, you know, what's he talking about there? Like, I didn't do anything wrong. And then it's me who has to find that middle ground. It was a very similar situation in Calgary, I thought, when Ryan Huska got hired, because I played for Ryan in the minors in Stockton. And one of the big things I said about Husk is he needs to get those vets on board early. The Backlunds and Uyghurs and, you know, Kadri, Huberto. Because as soon as he gets those guys to buy in, the young guys will follow and you'll have an entire team that's kind of growing together. There can't be a split. There can't be any clicks. But it is honestly everything, is getting those veteran guys and the guys with some experience that the younger guys lean on, getting them on board early is massive.
Speaking of a young new coach getting the old guys to fall in line, how much kudos do you give Spencer Carberry, a guy we've talked about quite a little? I think it's the first time we talked about him all year. Spencer Carberry, the job that he did getting the Washington Capitals somehow into the playoffs.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm still trying to figure out how it happens.
Same.
I was prepping for the show yesterday, and I'm thinking, Charlie Lindgren's been unbelievable lately. So I start digging into it, and he really hadn't even been that good. Like, they won a couple games that they really needed to win. I think the running joke going now is the goal differential. But that is about as accurate as it gets when you're talking about getting the vets to buy in early. Ovechkin, Carlson, even Kemper and Nett, getting those guys on board so that Hendricks Lapierre and Connor McMichael and these guys will all follow. It's pretty special. And I have a lot of respect for Spence. He started in the East Coast, worked his way up to the American League. He's won in a lot of places and put in the work and put in the hours. It's a young guy that I think has a great future in the game. And you know what? It's not a very exciting brand of hockey or an exciting team to watch, but all the kudos in the world to Spencer Carberry for getting them in the place that they have, because I think a large part of that success is due to him behind the bench.
We talked about this with Jeff Merrick, but the Leafs and the Bruins are going to play yet again, and for the most part, it has not gone well for the Leafs against the Bruins. But the Bruins are not quite the same Bruins team they were before. They don't have Patrice Bergeron. They don't have Zdeno Chara anymore. They do have some pretty good players, but do you think this is more an opportunity for the Leafs to face the Bruins, or do you think this is yet another moment where the Bruins could potentially embarrass the Leafs?
I mean, I know it's kind of be careful what you wish for, but I actually like the Boston matchup better than I did Florida, kind of prepping for this and watching the scenarios. play out as they did. I just think if there's any year that Toronto can get it done with the roster that they have, it's this year. Boston, two extremely capable goaltenders, very, very good, both of them. They have 12 forwards that work and compete. It's their defense core where I see Toronto potentially exposing them a little bit. They play hard, but I just think Toronto's core and the ability that they have offensively can do some damage there. What Boston has for them is the culture as well, and it's just the way they play. It's one of those teams where, I might have talked to you guys about this earlier in the year, but when you watch Boston play, they are about the definition of they play the right way. You'll hear that cliche a lot, and it's not a lot of big mistakes. They don't give you anything out there. It's a bit of a passive 1-2-2 where they're always on top of you. So as soon as you get the puck, someone's checking you, and you don't have a lot of time and space to make plays. And that can be extremely frustrating over probably a 7-game series here. But I just love the Leafs' pushback this year. This is one of the rosters that I've liked the most in the last probably couple of years. And if there's any year they're going to do it, I think it's this year. They need one of their goaltenders, looks like Samsonov, to step up and make some saves. And I think this thing goes 7.
Do you think that's what the Oilers need? They need that ability to avoid the big mistake?
That is one of their like crucial flaws. It's really slow starts. It's big mistakes at big moments in the game. And it's little things early like that. Generally, the things for the Oilers happen early in games because they get better and better as it goes on. They have the best third period goal differential in hockey. They kind of slow play it in there. But, I mean, if you're going to play Vegas in the first round, you want to spot them a 2-0 lead every game. Like, have fun winning that. It's just not going to happen. I just find with, I don't want to say a couple of their defensemen, but it does happen where it's going good and they'll just be just a costly mistake. And give them credit, they've gotten better at it. I think Knobloch's done a great job, and so has Paul Coffey on the back end of eliminating a lot of that. But they tend to dip just a little bit here and there.
The Nashville Predators, I want to get your take on them because, you know, I think most Canucks fans are, if it is indeed the Predators that the Canucks face, there's still a chance they could play Vegas or LA, but it's most likely going to be Nashville. I don't know if a lot of Canucks fans have, like, put a lot of thought into the Predators and looked at them too much. I mean, based on arena availability, I don't even know if the Predators expected to make the playoffs because, like, they've booked a lot of stuff for this time of the year. What is it about this team that's made them such a surprise in a good way for Nashville?
I think they're just well-structured. I think one thing that I love is the veterans they added in. There were some question marks and some people raising their eyebrows when they went out and signed Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen this summer. And I just remember thinking, well, those are two great moves. Bring in two guys in your locker room that have won, that have that experience. I've played with both of them. If I'm starting a team, those are two guys right at the top of the list that I want in there. But they also just have this belief system where I think they believe in what they're doing. It seems to me that they really like Andrew Brunette. And he, much like Tuck, has established a great culture there. And when you have a goalie like UC Saros, who's going to give you a chance to win every night, that's a really good feeling. And he does that. He is perennially, including this year, one of the top guys in the league in terms of any goaltending stat. And if you have a guy like that in your net, that gives you a huge confidence boost. They worked a lot off momentum this year, but that 18 game point streak that they put together this year is maybe the most impressive thing out of the NHL season this year. Like, out of anything that's happened, including individual milestones, getting points in 18 straight and at that point in the year is incredible. And I still kind of look up and down their roster and think how they did it. Because if you look at the Canucks back to back with them, I like Vancouver's roster a lot better. But culture, belief, some veterans, and a good goaltender can take you pretty far.
Which pairing would you take? Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek, or Ryan McDonagh and Roman Josi?
Oh, as soon as you said which pair, I knew you were going Josi. I'll probably go Hughes and Hronek still, just because I like Hronek better than McDonough. And McDonough's, you know, great, good skater, good veteran guy, blocks a ton of shots. But, I mean, you guys know, if you watch Vancouver hockey this year, those two don't have to defend a lot. They have this kind of synchronicity where they know where each other is. And Quinn's just, he's taken another step this year for me. I know Yossi is outstanding at what he does and had a tremendous back half. He's one of, if not the best defenders in hockey, but Quinn has just been such a nice surprise. I don't want to say surprise, but such a fun player to watch this year on both ends of the puck. He has clearly taken a step forward in wanting to improve his defensive game, takes a lot of pride in it. And getting that captaincy, I think, really forced him to take a lot of the weight of that team on his shoulders, and it seems like he just relished that opportunity. He's been unreal this year. He's my vote for Norris. I expect that with a lot of others, but he wins that question for me in the either or, just because of what he's been able to accomplish this year.
Okay, let's throw another either or at you. It's Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You're a NHL team, and you have some say in who you get to play in the first round. Who do you want to face? The Nashville Predators, Los Angeles Kings, or the Vegas Golden Knights?
I mean, it's probably Nashville. In saying that and pumping them up, it's probably Nashville. LA, we talked about last week about how they can bore you to death. They can play defensive, but also score. And I just don't have a great feeling about them. And then Vegas is just Vegas.
Yeah.
This is, it's looking like Edmonton's going to have to play them in the first round, which is a nightmare series to off the bat. But just in terms of, you know, body of work, I'll say Nashville. I just think they're the most susceptible, but I could say LA for that too, just because of the goaltending. Saros could steal them a series by himself. And I just don't think you can say the same on the LA side.
I bring this up because there is a scenario, a very, very real and possible scenario where the Canucks do kind of get to dictate where they want to finish. Right now, I know you can't juke the standings or juke games, but there's games that you go into and like, we're going to win this game. And then there's other games where you go into and we're like, if we don't win, it's not the worst thing on the planet. Now, I don't know how to do this. I'm not an NHL coach, but I assume it has, you know, like potential lineup decisions and maybe putting the backup or the third string goalie in as opposed to the starter.
Shooting it in your own net.
I mean, those are options that are available to you as a professional, but I mean, you've played in the NHL close to 200 games. Like, nobody goes out and consciously tries to lose, but there are decisions that you can make that could maybe shade that way or another. You understand what I'm getting at here with the Canucks. Like, they could go into that game in Winnipeg and have a lot of very interesting decisions on their hands.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just like tanking, right, for the teams at the bottom. They're not deliberately tanking. They're not deliberately throwing games. But if you call up half your American League team and start them every night and you look like the San Jose Sharks, you are going to lose every game. I thought it was interesting. I was just hearing kind of some debate on whether you start Demko or not. I think that decision's up to him. I look at a situation like last night, and Boston's kind of in the same position. They lost to Washington the night before. They're playing against Ottawa. They're getting absolutely manhandled. And they go out in the third period and put up 23 shots and put up a real fight. I just think there's so much competitive nature for guys that, yeah, you might have that mindset going in where it's like, you know, we're not necessarily going to throw it, but not too mad if we lose. But then if you're losing after a certain amount of time, it's just guys are so competitive that after a certain amount of that lopsidedness, I guess I'll say, it's tough to just kind of let it stand by. But I understand the situation that they're in now and that there is a very more favorable matchup for them. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see which way they go. I would fully expect Demko to start, but also not surprised if he doesn't and they go with Casey or Seelovs.
Okay, I'm glad that you're explaining this the way that you are, because I think some fans and listeners, whatever, have this very naive thought that, you know, guys are actually either told or it's understood to go and lose. Like, it never happens because it's almost impossible to try and dictate it. Like, you'd have to choreograph a loss and you can't do it. And the other part of it is that you can't really regulate the emotions of guys. Like you mentioned that Bruins game last night, and Bruff and I were texting back and forth about it. Like they were clearly like, okay, this is enough. We're not, this is Ottawa. These guys stink and they're not in the playoffs and we have pride on the line.
So I think playing at home was a factor though for the Bruins, right? Like the Bruins crowd.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to like put up a stinker against a Bruins crowd or you might not get out of there.
Right. And like,
yeah, you can't lose on fan appreciation night for Ottawa.
But see, the Canucks are going into Winnipeg on fan appreciation night. So they could.
That's
just
the
sit
thing
back.
For me is you want to go into the playoffs feeling good too. If you walk into Winnipeg and beat the Jets in their own building the game before the playoffs start, you're feeling good. And I think that's the biggest thing is don't worry about anybody else. Don't look across the standings and the scoreboards and look at all these different scenarios of what's going to happen. You're going to have to play a couple of these teams anyway. Just worry about yourselves and worry about what's going on in this locker room. I think it's huge for them to go in feeling good. They got a great win last night at home. Go beat the Jets on the road and go into the playoffs feeling as good as possible.
Luke, this was awesome as always, and we're very excited to announce that throughout these Stanley Cup playoffs, you're going to be a weekly regular on this show. Every Friday, it's the Luke Gazdick Show. We're renaming it just for Fridays.
I love it, boys. I'm looking forward to it, too.
Yeah, us too. Thanks, Luke. We appreciate it.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Thanks. That's Luke Gazdick, former NHLer, now in a Sportsnet NHL analyst and Halford and Brough Show regular, which I'm sure is going to be first on his resume moving forward. Now.
Fiesta Fridays with Luke Gazdick. Welcome to the party.
What, like the symmetry, right? Mm-hmm. Luke.
So what do our Fridays look like right now?
Luke Gazdick,
mm-hmm.
Fiesta Fridays, Rick Dollywell, Ask Us Anything.
Oh, my AJ. God.
AJ's Pizza.
Yeah. I'm really excited to talk to AJ this week, by the way.
Oh.
About Guzman?
About Guzman's return.
We made fun of him about that, too. We're like, it's not even close, really.
The Yankees are riding such a high when we talked to him last week. And then
Jays won again last night.
They did.
It's actually on the TV.
Kikuchi.
It's on the TV right now. The score is 5-1 in the bottom of the sixth as I watched Jays in 30. What was the final?
5-4.
Ooh.
They did a little comeback. Romano had a bit of an issue in the ninth.
They had a couple hiccups for Jordy.
They threw him right into the fire.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Laddie, do you think Demko is going to play Thursday in Winnipeg, regardless of what happens, you know, tonight between Dallas and St. Louis or whatever is going on with the division? Do you think he will? Do you think he should play? Or did you see enough from him last night against the Calgary Flames to be like, all right, you're ready to roll?
I wouldn't be surprised if he sat for the last game, just for injury. They don't want him to get injured or re-aggravate something before the playoffs. I could see that as the reason why.
Can you imagine if that happened?
Oh, that's anytime you play any game, anytime you lace him up, you're adding potential risk, right? So I think they definitely are thinking about resting him.
It doesn't sound like, you know, Rick Tocchet didn't say what he was going to do for Winnipeg, but when he says, I need to consult with the trainers, that means that he's not putting a ton of emphasis on this game. He's really not, because, you know, if it was an important game, he'd be like, the only reason I need to consult with the trainers is to make sure that they have all the medications that they need to give the players to get them out on the ice, right? Like, he's thinking about resting guys. He's definitely thinking about resting guys. Any guys with bumps or bruises, you know, we learned yesterday. And this is something I heard too, that the playoffs might start on Sunday. Everyone would have been talking about, okay, well, maybe it's going to be Tuesday and that's going to be a big break and you're going to get a lot of rest, and the Preds especially are going to be rested. But the Canucks, if they have any banged up guys, you know, they'll finish their season Thursday and then they won't play until Tuesday. So that's a long time. Kind of changes the equation a little bit. If you play on Sunday, then you're talking about, okay, Thursday, then you'd only have Friday and Saturday to get any rest, and then you're right into the playoffs. Like, that's a 2-day difference. So I think rest becomes even more important for any guys that are potentially banged up if the playoffs are going to start Sunday and not Tuesday.
But here's the thing you got to take into consideration. The Canucks don't have the amount of recalls, the cap space, or the roster fluidity to do like what – did you see Carolina last night?
Mm-hmm.
Carolina last night sat the following players: Sebastian Aho, Frederick Anderson, Jake Guentzel, Seth Jarvis, Brett Pesce, Jacob Slavin, Jordan Staal, Andrei Svechnikov.
Yeah, but they have the option to rest some major guys.
Not to the degree that I think everyone's thinking.
No, no, no.
They can rest four guys, basically.
Well, I don't think anyone's thinking like they're going to rest the whole team. But
well,
like
Carolina rested their whole
team. But, you know, the big question would be Demko. Mm-hmm. And then I think JT Miller's logged a lot of minutes, and then you talk about the trainers. Like, does Besser still have something that's bugging him? Does he sit? How healthy is Petey? And it might actually be a clue about, you know, people's injury status or how healthy they are. You know,
I wouldn't be shocked.
What
if
about Lindholm?
Abbey Canucks on Thursday? That wouldn't shock me at all.
Sorry,
Wouldn't shock me at all if it was like the Abbey Canucks.
Yeah, but
on
they
Thursday.
Can't.
No,
do
no.
That.
But the A-Dog, you're not listening. They like can't they, do that. They can't just send the whole team.
No. I know. I'm being a little facetious, but I'm just saying a lot of guys might get rested.
But they can only. I think they can only rest four guys. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of guys.
They've done the math.
Yeah, I'm there's not that many guys.
Okay. Key guys will get rested then.
You right. mentioned Carolina, though.
I love it when A-Dog listens to like five seconds of a segment and then he's like,
yes, Greg. Why doesn't Greg interject?
You mentioned Carolina. Yes. Did you see who they did have in the lineup? Former Penticton V, Bradley Nadeau, making his NHL
debut.
Yeah,
I did see that, actually.
He was with Penticton a year ago.
I had no idea who the guy was. So he played for Penticton.
Yeah.
He made his NHL debut
last year with
the
University of Maine. Played his first game. He signed his contract at the end of the year. He was a -3.
You remember? Great. You remember Max Comtois?
Yes.
He also made his Canes debut. Yes. I didn't even know he was playing with Carolina.
I think they got him at the deadline.
They threw a bunch of random dudes in there and they lost. So mission accomplished for them, I guess. They rested everyone. If the goal is to not now, everything is dependent on what happens with Dallas and St. Louis tonight. Where the Canucks can either play for something in that Winnipeg game or it means absolutely nothing. So I know we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves. And speaking of that, we're way up against it for time. So we'll duck out. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation.
Text in your questions or comments into the Dunbar Lumber text line. We've got an open segment on the other side. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
.735 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in Hour 2 of the program. Hour 2 is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Speaking of the alcohols, did you read the in-basket early this morning? We had two separate texters that wrote in to confirm that the Cutwater margaritas that they sell at Rogers Arena, the 12.5% in a can.
They'll hit you quick.
Can confirm they work.
They get in on the forecheck, those marks.
Pow! Right in the kisser.
There's no 1-3-1.
Did you say if you're a lightweight?
Okay.
You didn't have one on Saturday.
How's with my kid?
Halford can't hold his liquor.
Well, your kid had one.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't looking.
Rosie, put down that Cutwater.
All it took was two drinks, eh?
Two drinks for what? Well, it's not like I was wearing a lampshade on my head. I said, Cutwaters, they're going to get you where you want to go. That's it. They just expedite the process a little bit more.
It's a bit of a hack.
Speaking of a hack, I got another one. Do you want to hear about this? So there's this company called Cottage Springs, and they do the ready RTDs, the vodka waters.
Yeah.
They do just a vodka water, but it's not carbonated. It's not vodka soda. It's just vodka.
And water.
Yeah.
But tap flavored. Water or something?
Well, I don't know what kind of water they use, but it's not carbonated. Point being, it's flavored. They sell it in a 4-liter box. So you know the boxed wine that you put in your fridge with the little... They have one. My brother and I dabbled on the weekend.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Wasn't there a big thing in Alberta about someone, a company selling like a 4-liter jug of vodka?
Yep. Yeah.
And some politician made a big stink out of it.
It was a clear plastic jug.
Right.
And it was no name. It just said vodka.
It was not super expensive.
It was a classy joint.
It was real affordable.
Poor livers.
Pardon?
Those poor livers.
Well.
Poor leaders.
So there was a real dialogue that went on there, right? Because I guess the politician in question was saying this is like...
you shouldn't be selling much vodka for this price while other people are like, hey, the economy's hard out there. Sometimes we need a 4-liter jug of vodka.
That just says vodka, right? Mm. It looks like a jug of bleach, but it's got vodka in it, right?
So don't want to mess it up.
The dialogue raged online. I'm more in the camp of that's affordable as opposed to that's not good.
Okay,
anyway,
so
there's
we got
our alcohol talk for the
We got a lot of good texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Here's a question from Brandon in Vancouver. Outside of the Oilers, which team should be most disappointed with a first round exit? It's a good question. I do think, you know, Brandon's right that the Oilers have a lot invested in this season. But, I mean, look, if the New York Rangers lose to the Washington Capitals in the first round,
colossal
and Panarin doesn't play up to the level that he's played in the regular season, and it's a second straight playoffs where Panarin doesn't show up, I think the New York Rangers would be an obvious pick. I think if Carolina loses to the New York Islanders, that's a massive disappointment for Carolina.
I mean, honestly, we talked about this all
year. If Dallas goes out in the first round, that's really disappointing for Dallas.
But if Dallas plays Vegas,
yeah, that's still, though.
Here's
still.
The thing. This is the thing with the East, is that the second wild card and the third spot in the Metro were always going to be the two weakest teams in the entire playoff.
Yeah, there's some big mismatches in the East.
You know, like
in terms of point differential.
We were texting. I mean, Bruff and I are so excited about the playoffs. We're texting back and forth, like a couple schoolgirls, and we're like, "Hey, check out this.
Who do you like?
Who do you like? What's your favorite team?" And you were talking about the Rangers. You're like, "Well, the Rangers got so lucky because they get to draw probably one of the worst playoff teams of the modern era in the Washington Capitals." I'm like, "Well, yeah, but they also earned it." Like, if you knew if you finished tops in the East, and the Rangers took one step further, they finished tops in the NHL, you're going to get a pretty weak team, mm-hmm. and that is the Washington Capitals. The Carolina Hurricanes, by nature of finishing exactly where they finished, they get a very advantageous matchup by taking on the Islanders. But here's the inverse of that. The Dallas Stars could go out tonight
mm-hmm.
and beat St. Louis or get their point or whatever, finish top in the Western Conference, meaning they get home ice advantage all the way through if they want, and their reward could be, it's less likely now because Vegas moved up, but it could be Vegas in the first round.
I want to read another text in here. It says, it's unsigned. It says, if you have the opportunity to take the conference, I think you have to try to take it because home ice in the Western Conference Finals would be huge. Of course, you have to make it to the conference finals. It is interesting, and maybe it says something about our mentality, like we're still not 100% confident in the Canucks, that we're kind of like, they got an opportunity to win the conference, right? Like if Dallas loses to St. Louis tonight, mm-hmm. they would have to lose in regulation. Mm-hmm. The Canucks with a win in Winnipeg would have an opportunity to win the conference. That's pretty cool, right? Like, that's good. And everyone's like, I don't really know if I want that because I'd rather play the Nashville Predators. Are you risking something with that sort of attitude? Because if I am the Nashville Predators coach, and let's say Dallas loses tonight, mm-hmm. and let's say the Canucks do have an opportunity with a win.
Throw the game in Winnipeg?
Yeah, you're kind of like, these guys, like, had an opportunity to win the conference, but they chose to not even try to do that because they wanted to play us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there's maybe sometimes, bulletin board material is a little overstated, but I do think there's that element there.
Well, do you think Toronto's having that conversation with Boston? Because Boston lost the last two games, fell out of first place in the Atlantic and dropped into second.
Totally, yeah.
I don't know. Like,
I would use it as a coach.
But that's why I had the conversation with Gazdik, was I was like, guys don't actually blow games to get a more favorable matchup. Like, you know, NHL players aren't wired like that. Coaches and executives might
be. I think there's a difference between intentionally blowing a game and then also just like not getting up for a game, right? Like, the game isn't important to you. And I think last night in Boston, what happened was the Bruins went into that game probably not ready for it. They didn't get themselves ready for it the same way they would if it was a big game, because they were kind of like, if we lose this game, whatever. And then as the game wore on, they were like, actually, this is getting a little bit embarrassing. Like, we're getting dominated on home ice by the Ottawa Senators. And then they make the push in the third and they nearly tie it up. Ultimately, they lose the game because of the bad start that they had, but they showed a little something. But I think that was different because they were playing in Boston, right? And the Bruins fans were like, guys, these tickets weren't free, so I would like you to do something here.
Okay, but to answer your earlier question, the text that came in I mean, I think the mentality has to be, in order to get to the conference final, we need to win the first round first. Like, let's take care of business. So the immediacy of it, it's not necessarily where the Canucks are at in their evolution or how serious I think they are as a cup contender. It's just the reality of the situation that if you want to get to the conference final, you need to win the first round first. So, you know, horse before the cart, cart before the horse. Just focus on the first round and getting out of it. And if that's the case, Nashville. Sorry, Nashville. Mm-hmm. Sorry, bulletin board, but you want to play Nashville. I don't think anyone in their right mind is going to say that they would rather play L.A. or Vegas than Nashville in the first round.
Some people might. I mean, some people might look at Vegas and go, that, you know, like,
well, it, to those people,
been that good. Or L.A., you know, like, you know, yeah, they're kind of a boring team, but, you know, they haven't been out of the first round in a while.
To those people, I would say your opinion can't be wrong, yet your opinion is wrong.
Mm-hmm. I would want to play Nashville. Too. Yeah. TJ from Surrey. What expectations do you guys have for this team in the playoffs, talking about the Canucks? What's the minimum level of performance you want to see from both certain players in the team in general? Okay,
we
so
did this already,
but
I get what
well,
you're
yeah, it's just, but we're gonna have to do it a few other times.
Yeah,
that's the playoffs for you. I just think it's hard to say now. Like, you know, afterwards if it's been good or bad, you know, you really do, and there are all sorts of different things that can happen in the playoffs, all sorts of different reasons why you lost a series. For example, Jeff Merrick brought up earlier when the Washington Capitals got upset by the Montreal Canadiens all the way back in 2010. And in some ways, they overreacted to that. Like, they actually played pretty well in that series. They just got goalied. So what if the Canucks lose in seven to Nashville, but they dominate them? And UC Saros has just stood on his head. Are you how do you
I'd
feel
still
about
be disappointed.
The
they gotta
I'd be
win,
disappointed.
They got to win one round. I'd I think that's the minimum. They have
okay.
to win
but
one
But I
round.
Think what happened with the Washington Capitals is, like, their whole identity was thrown into arrears just because of one series against the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, I don't know if that would happen. That wouldn't have to happen for the Canucks. Like, if they lost in the first round and played well, they wouldn't blow the team up. But it would still be disappointing. Like, they should win a round. That should be the minimum expectation based on how they played this
so it's
year.
Funny.
I think you're always
win one round.
I think you're always disappointed when you lose a series.
Of
like
course.
It's naturally going to happen, you know. So if you say, like, I'll be satisfied if they win one round and then they go out in the second, I'm like, will you though? Like, because
you're top eight
team at
that
point.
You want them to keep
Is that
winning.
Not acceptable?
Yeah.
Top eight team?
I think okay. once you win a round, here's the thing. You want, like, for me, I'm not quite at the point, and I'm not going to speak for anyone else listening, I'm not at the point right now where I've got Stanley Cup dreams. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, in 2011, you go into that year and you're like, this is the year, right? And that's the only year I've ever watched the Canucks where I'm like, guys, I think this could be it. I mm-hmm. think this could be the year. And that's what made it so much more disappointing to me than when they lost in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals in 94. There weren't the expectations in 94.
Yeah.
Now, eventually it was disappointing when they lost to the Rangers, but it didn't haunt me for a decade like the 2011 loss did. But once you get that dream of this could actually happen, then things change. So let's say they beat Nashville or whoever. They advance to the second round.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden you're like, there's only seven other teams
that would
left
take,
in
I think
this
that would
thing,
take
right?
two rounds.
Why
for
not
seven
us?
Other teams left
Why
in this
not
thing?
Us?
It would take two rounds for me. Like, even if they get past the first round, I'd still have – I just have so much scarring that I would just be like, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But if they get past the
what
second
if they
round
– what if they just roll through the first round, though?
Well, yeah, that would definitely help. But, I mean, again, it comes down to matchups also, right? Like, it depends what they draw in the second round. Like, if it's – Yeah, I don't know. I would just be hesitant.
Spoiler alert, it's going to be a good team.
Yeah. Until that second round win, then all of a sudden be like, oh, my God.
Part of this conversation I don't like is, like, it's been done ad nauseum on this, quite frankly, station. I've heard other shows do it. And
oh, I'm sorry people are excited about the playoffs.
No.
Buzzkill over there.
No, that particular.
Get a cut water in him.
The expectations conversation. Give me a break, you guys. The expectations conversation, because it's such a basic conversation.
Sure. But we haven't had it in a while.
Huh?
We haven't had it in a long time.
I heard Dom and Josh talking about it, and it's either you have expectations or you don't. That's it, right? What the expectations are, it sort of becomes a ridiculous conversation. It's like, well, the first round is the sixth bar for success. It's like, well, if you win a round, then you obviously have the conversation that Jason just brought up. Well, wait a minute. Now we're one of eight surviving teams. Our expectations have changed. If you don't win a round, then you have all these caveats and, well, what happens if you get goalie? What happens if you play great and you lose game seven?
What if you
overtime?
Have a key injury and you're kind of like, well, it wasn't our fault.
So it doesn't really, like, it doesn't matter, that conversation. Like, the expectations are an individual.
Well, you're gauging the fan base. Is that
sorry?
Not, you're gauging where the fan base
but every
is
fan
at.
Has a different
good
understanding. But every fan, no, because every fan is, one, dumb, but has a very basic understanding of what they consider to be success or failure.
Oh, my God.
That's it. So
you're digging a hole here, buddy.
I'm not digging a hole. I stand by what I said. People can have any expectations they want, right? But the reality of it is that they're going to change as soon as you get into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The moment something happens.
I mean, that's what I said, but I said it in a lot nicer way.
Yeah, well, that's because you're the nice one of the two of us.
On our show, it'll be like game to game. Like, we win with the one game. Like, that's cup, baby. You lose the next game. Ah, we're toast.
Yeah, just like the regular.
Told you this team was nothing.
Yeah. Just like the regular
every
season.
Game.
How many times did we
all you idiots fell for this fool's gold.
Win game three. Oh, we're back.
We're back. I can't believe how good we are. We're totally going to win the cup. Game four, loss. That's it.
Oh, it's over.
It's over. You know, it's not going to happen.
So, I know people get triggered when we talk about the Leafs on this show, but I actually really am looking forward to this Leafs-Bruins series just because I think, I mean, we've seen some incredible moments when these two teams get together in the playoffs, and usually it's like bad for the Leafs, which, you know, it's pretty good, although it's also good for the Bruins, which is not so good, but... Is there a scenario here where this could be the year for the Leafs? And the reason and this is the reason why I've brought up the Washington Capitals before, where they had that 2-year window and that they said it, like, we got a 2-year window, and then the window closed, they didn't win the Stanley Cup in that window, and the very next year, which should have been when the window was closed, they go and win the Stanley Cup.
Uh-huh.
And it's because certain things broke for them the right way. Like, could you not see a scenario? I'm just going to throw this out there, where the Leafs beat a Bruins team. They finally get over the hump. They slay the Dragon, because I don't think the Bruins are – I think the Bruins are a good team, but, you know, once you get to the playoffs, that's when you're really going to miss a guy like Patrice Bergeron, right?
Yeah.
Like, with all due respect to Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha, if you're looking at the forwards, and especially down the middle, Toronto versus Boston, there's no comparison. So let's say Toronto gets by Boston. They could, and let's say Tampa Bay upsets Florida, which is also possible. Doesn't that like open an avenue for the Leafs to get? Is there anyone in the East that you're like, wow, that team is unbelievable? I don't think there's any team in that conference where I'm. It's not the Rangers. I tell you that much. It's definitely not the Rangers. Maybe Florida would be that team for me, but outside of that. I think it's pretty wide open for the six teams, and I'm not going to include the Islanders and the Capitals. Like, I don't think those teams are going to do anything, but the other six teams in that conference, I see as fully capable of getting to a Stanley Cup final.
So the issue with the 2018 Washington Capitals comparison is that that playoff run was so bizarre. So remember.
What Stanley Cup runs are not, in a way, bizarre?
But that's what I'm saying. So
there's something bizarre about all of them.
So it's very hard to predict or say, like, it's going to follow that path because the path is so strange. Washington lost the first two games of their opening round to Columbus.
I forgot about that.
They were, and then in the third game where they were going to go down 0-3, they went to double overtime. So they were within one goal of being down 0-3 and pretty much being cooked. They changed goalies. They went from Grubauer to Holtby. And then in the second round is actually where they gained the momentum because they finally got over the hump. And as Merrick mentioned, they finally beat Pittsburgh, right? So you at that point, I think a lot of people were like, oh, well, here's the coronation. But they had to go to seven against Tampa Bay in the conference final. And then eventually the wagon was rolling and they were like, okay, we're going to take care of Vegas in the final. And they did in five games. I don't know if there's anything that jumps out at me that says – there's a moment on the horizon for the Leafs, but that's because, as we just finished saying, the playoffs evolve and you just sort of evolve with them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, when, I mean, you talk about the Canucks in 2011, going into the playoffs, everyone was like, this could be the year. And then 3 games into the playoffs, everyone's like, this is definitely the year. And then 3 games later, they're like, oh my God, the world is going to open up and swallow us whole.
And it nearly did.
But then when they beat Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, it eventually did, but when they not beat, against Chicago.
But here's the thing. When they beat Chicago in game 7 and they slayed the dragon and exorcised the demons, we all thought we were having that moment. Like, this is the moment. This mm-hmm. is where they get over the hump. And they did up until game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. So things evolve in a way that you want to try and go back to these past moments and, you know, here's a blueprint or here's a team that did this and everything. But with Toronto, I mean, I could see them. I mean, here's Laddie. We'll turn it to the goaltending. Could you see a scenario where they start the playoffs with Samsonov and they end with Wohl?
That's how I see it going.
Yeah,
and I
right?
think that's the wrong decision. And I think they're going to get to Wohl eventually.
But. Right, but here's that's what I'm saying is that sometimes those are the moments that you don't necessarily predict what you've got in your back pocket. Like,
why not just start with the better goalie, though?
But mm-hmm. they started with Grubauer, and then they finished with Holtby, right?
Can they not just start with the better goalie? That would be what I would do, personally.
Well, maybe they don't agree with your opinion that Wohl is the better goalie.
They're wrong.
See, that's right. Like I said earlier, like you can have that opinion. It's just the wrong opinion. Okay, we got one final hour to go on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. We got a few things we need to take care of. We're going to go to Utah. Spence Checkitz is going to join us on the program, ESPN 700 Sports Radio in Utah. He's a host. We're going to talk about the NHL going to Salt Lake City. At 8:30, we're going to give away a $100 gift card to Bridge Brewing for the best What We Learn. Send them in, hashtag them WWL. Put a beer emoji into your What We Learn. The best one will win a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing. Finally, before we go to break, I need to tell you about JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca for more. Stay tuned. One final hour to go. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.